of a cancelled childhood holiday. It's called Listening to the Sea. My seventh birthday, the sun was high, Dad's red motorbike washing out to dry. Our holiday beckoned to cast a line into the waves for the very first time. A car was booked to drive us there, where seagulls screamed through Margate air. The following day he came on foot, clutch cable snapped out of luck. Gave me sixpence, my sadness to quell. Mother quickly searched for a white seashell. By the yellow bricks of a backyard wall, I wiped my tears and listened to its call. Thank you. One of my favourite poets is who is it? I forgot his name. Vernon Scannell. I love Vernon Scannell, so I'll just finish off by reading the Vernon Scannell poem. Vernon Scannell had the most unlikely job for a poet. He was a professional boxer when he was discharged from the army after the Second World War. He became a professional boxer, and he wrote a lovely poem called Taken in Adultery. Taken in Adultery. For this poem, you've got to imagine two middle-aged people sitting in an empty pub after their moment of passion. Shadowed by shades and spied upon by glass, their search for privacy conducts them here with an irony that neither notices to a public house. The wrong time of year for outdoor games. Wear over gin and tonic, best bitter and potato crisps. They talk without much zest, almost laconic. Would you guess that they were lovers, this dull pair? The answer, I suppose, is yes, you would, despite her spectacles and faded hair. And his worn look of being someone's dad, you know that they are having an affair, and neither finds it doing them much good. Presumably in one another's eyes, they must look different to what we see, desirable in some way, otherwise they'd hardly choose to meet here furtively to discuss their bleak needs among the mess of fag ends, crumpled cellophane and crumbs, their love feast litter. Though they might profess to find great joy together, all that comes across to us is tiredness, melancholy. When they are silent, each seems listening. There must be many voices in the air, reproaches, accusations, suffering that no amount of passion keeps elsewhere, imperatives that brought them to this room stiff from the car's back seat lose urgency. They start to wonder who's betraying whom, how will it end, and how did it begin? The woman taken in adultery, and the man who feels he too was taken in, Vernon Scannell.
Thanks, sir. Next up we have Finn Rattal.
One of my guy called Lawrence Ferlinghetti does. It's from a TV called Coney Island of Mine. Don't know if you've heard of it, it's beautiful. It's called Dog Coney Island. The dog trots freely through the street and sees reality. And the things he sees are bigger than himself, drunks in doorways, moons on trees. The dog trots freely through the street and the things he sees are smaller than himself. Fish and rooster pants in holes, chickens in the Chinatown window there, heads a block away. The dog trots freely through the street and the things he smells something like himself. The dog trots freely through the street and goes past puddles and babies, cats and babies, poodles and policemen. He doesn't hate cops, he really has no use for them. He goes past them and past the dead cows hung up in a pole outside the San Francisco meat market. He goes past the Romeo Ravioli factory and past Toy Tower and past Congressman Doyle of the Un-American Committee. He's afraid of quite sour, but he's not afraid of Congressman Donald, although what he hears is very discouraging, very depressing, very absurd to a sad young dog like himself, to a serious dog like himself. But he will not be Muslim, he has his own free world to live in, his own police to eat. Congressman Doyle is just another fire hydrant to him. The dog trots freely through the street and has his own dog's life to live and to think about and reflect upon, touching and tasting and testing everything, investigating everything without benefit of perjury, a real realist with a real tale to tell and a real tale to tell it with. A real life, barking, democratic dog with something to say about ontology, something to say about reality and how to taste it and how to hear it. with his head cocked sideways on street corners, listening as if he is just about to have his picture taken for Victor Records, listening for his master voice and looking like a living question mark into the great gramophone of puzzling existence, with its wondrous hollow horn that always seems just about to spout forth some victorious answer to everything.
Next up, we have Seamus O'Dowd.
Empty crisp bag scrapes across a vacant concrete expanse, caught in a gateway, throws hysterics, then scrapes down the terrace. As Marchie said, I hate March the most. Marchie says, March is a bitch. March, he said, and march we did. Up the Comrades for Paddy's Day. Oh, Paddy boy. The cloud coming down, and come she con, but luck it will lift later, further on. Our grandfather's broken empire. Our fathers built a free state of sorts, and now if we can't dwell poetically upon the earth, then what was the fucking point? We were cortex warriors going back to nature, and being there like none had been before. You see, I'm an atheist, and he was a pagan. But really, honestly, there isn't much difference. We both like the classics. Both had hopes and fears for our fixtures and forces. Egocentric and self-obsessed. Purely orphic. He got me off on it. And the trees and the animals came forth in our presence. Our work became our play. And even if there was a certain difference, every statement from our lips became a lyric sufficient unto itself. And narcissistic was he, what? Through the forest and by the pool, an existence of pure contemplation. The flowers bloomed for us. You could see he fancied himself. Took pleasure in every breath. Manana, manana, manana. And we neither loitered, nor lingered, nor meandered, nor malingered, as we roamed and we rambled, as we roamed and we rambled to villages, the two pastel towns, the further south, the farther out, and the farther out, the worse we got. Dionysus, fierce and growing fiercer, to be at his fiercest with the early summer madness. Ripe seed, yellow in the fields, green corn, bluebells, wild garlic in the woods. So there he was, Babylon burning, Stonehenge bands. Oh, take me away, he says, to those wooded places with mountain views and flowing rivers, and I will burn that wood there, draw the dole, and stay stoned. And so away he went, became another wimp, whinging in the wilderness. I see him still, I remember well. His back to the streets, his tongue to the road. But I stayed behind. I got a job. Pays lousy, but the cause is good. The responsibility is heavy. I drink a lot of coffee these days. I love my work. I give it 80%. Took the weekend off. And after the equinox, how the hawthorn blooms, white petals and thorns, ah, how the hawk blooms, white petals and thorns. Down by the well, the smell of resurrection in the earth, and the taste of April.
Next up, can we have George Hesler?
Hi, this is a poem I wrote a long time ago, a few years ago, I think. And it's called 229 Words. I once thought love, thought I'd found a thing. Sailing like the breeze, barely touching the ground, unfolding mysteriously in the wind. I once thought friendship, all is possessed, but through stumbling that was forgotten, I followed my pulse, fully arrested by emotion's fleshy face. With magnetic meetings and dream floating ships, blessings of happiness, time-ending bliss, henna blossoms and honey, weightlessness, I stubbornly swore that this would not dissolve, because I foresaw no problems. But this pretty love soon became undiscernible. It flooded my boundaries, but my heart had still burned, still bubbled away under the waters of wisdom. And when these passions had subsided, I was left with my friend. Somehow we left. We'd been given a gift of being able to amend the names of our ambitions. This was all too much like some unknown or abstract knowledge, like standing on the road, looking at the bend. Painfully soon, this too had subsided. The scales fell from my eyes. I was left with my friend, deeply. Somehow we laughed. These old fires had turned into sacrifice. There were lessons I wish I had taught her, but I had offered up my pretensions to be drowned. Friends have asked before, what is this commitment that I am longing to see? So I asked them, most mysteriously, is the earth ever free from the light of the sun?
Thanks, Gerald. And next, can we ask up Alan Kerry?
Thanks very much. Don't really have an introduction, so I'll just read. Make him laugh, watch as the glittery fades, the scum settles on the side of your glass, your toothy grin yellows as your gut bellows and your breath stinks in my ear as I grow more disgruntled listening to your personality tremble through its aches and pains, become disgusted at my own refrains and spend my penance counting beads of poppy heads, waiting for an excuse to bend my rainbows into junky quivers of redress to strangers who never have the time to bore me. Kicks from social immediacy, but never too much intimacy, before I feel ugly and exposed, indelicate and used, bedridden and confused among the mirrors of my own design, and you only thinking in terms of yourself, always we are smothered, slathered in ego, screeching clowns, their pants fall down. The cheer turns our cheeks rosy as my throat gets caught on truth that were never mine to quote. Quoth these women poets, these men folks with more to bray. Perhaps I find comfort in a kitchen, beauty in crockery, perfection in a pie, but sigh discontent at my zygotic lot. Boycott the lot of you, ham my shanks and spit out the razor blades of inequality, of fences raised in decorum frayed, for you are unhappy too in your role play, wearing blue and hypnotized by balustrades of girls in tights and lecherous for the sake of vodka highs. But home again we wear our thighs together and hope the other one thinks we are pretty and strong and different from the other but still humane.
Next up, we have Patricia Walsh.
Alright, my first poem, I don't know if anybody remembers growing up in the early to mid-90s. Some of you are right, but when I was a teenager, one thing we always had to fail was the impending show on 2FM at 8 o'clock. And it's kind of under the brunt of alternative music. And tell you what the alternative means, that wasn't really alternative at all. What's the alternative? 8 p.m. was the holy hour. Homework stitched up for the evening, after a fashion, and raced the radio to put it on and tweak it appropriately for Dave Fanning's show. How we tuned our ears to the scattering of crumbs afforded to local acts. This one matters, here we come. Stender falls in the sect, vying for national crumbs. Blank tape was always ready to surrender to the second record button. One rule, no talking. No ads, no joke talking, no jingles. No room for discussion or answers. For this is 8 p.m. and this is a holy hour.
You haven't finished me yet, no.
This one is called Self-Portrait with a Sovereign Cap. Inbred to glory by a prize bull, her variegated coat belies the story of the quid pro quo of economics and essential business, especially where the cow's concerned. Every February was the same story. Mother and offspring begging to have each other back. Time and again, the mitigation of farm assets come to light in the necessary dark. When everyone just wants to sleep, revenge is contained for another day, stampeded to annoyance. But it's just humans like you, don't worry. Someday we will run you all, before being sold to the conveyor belt, barking at the stairs, or to give birth in your water, far from state control.
Thank you.
Patricia, next up we have Terry Denis.
I wrote it this morning after I had been in the night before. All night your words soaked into my flesh, into my body your poetry flowed like flowers, the words like melodies stroked my brain, alluring and comfortable. They smelled of the turf and bog of my ancestors. They danced in my joints to the rhythm of the spade, digging and cutting with laughter and pain, sewing, sorrow and mirth. They made music. They sang. And into your spell I fell. You who stood there in the shoes of a faith healer, saying the words I didn't understand, for no translation was necessary, to lure the soft-hearted, the unloved, hungry for passion, you entered my body and vibrated my soul. The sounds curled up in my bones and nestled in my heart like a drug. I slept and woke in the morning in a crib, encased in warmth, buttons of my blouse undone, expecting the touch of your hand to trace the curves of my breath, for I had been seduced by an Irish incantation.
Terry, I think we can all relate to that. Before I call up our last poet in the open mic, the evening, is there anyone else you'd like to say a poem who hasn't? Would I say another poem?
I've got a joke.
Say a joke.
Did you hear the one about the two English literature professors on holiday in a nudist camp? They were sitting in the sunshine reading their books, and one of them turned to the other and said, "Have you read Marx?" He said, "Yes, I think it's these wicker chairs."
Days when the ball of our vision had eagles that flew unabashed to sun, when hand and bow was decision, and eye, arrow, heart were one. When the pleasures as waves to a swimmer came heaving for rapture ahead, invoke them, they dwindle, they glimmer as lights over mountains of the dead. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin. Okay, our last reader for the evening, who would normally be Anasetti, he's over in China. He's not Anasetti. It's Stephen Arrillo.
Certainly not. Wednesday is St. Patrick's Day. Do you know that? If you don't, it is. And someone has to write about it. So here's Paddy's Day poem. Filling my head with visions of Paddy, head tall in green robes, gold stick, all a shiny, and pondering perhaps what might have been if he left us alone with the snakes and the sin. If on the night he woke with fright to visions of Folcott's children crying, "O holy youth, come back to Erin and walk amongst us," he proceeded instead to what passed for alehouses in 4th century Britain, and proceeded to preach to those there on matters such as sport and women, or what passed for sport and women in 4th century Britain. If leaving our ancient forebears to Druidic rites, local lore, personal beliefs, and the freedom to worship whatever god they felt worth worshipping, would we have tread the Catholic road to the Ryan Report, to days of women being the slaves of men, gays being the agents of Satan, and non-Christians being merely savages and pagans? Now may I let slip a simple prayer to Kavanagh's true gods of sound, stone, word and tint, that Paddy's monument on the hill of Tara go the way of Nelson's on O'Connell Street. So thank you, Paddy, for the days on the piss, but as much as I'll enjoy them, you were not worth it nonetheless.
We're going to Tara, are we? On the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
See, Alan Tony has just run through the door. We've actually seen with our last reader there.
Oh, it's
sure. Is that the name of the song?
Yeah.
Okay, I think Alan's going to give us a song.
Yeah.
Someone in the meantime wants to say a poem while he's stepping into the guitar. Brilliant.
I woke up Sunday morning. This is one about just being sagging. I woke up Sunday morning under a white cotton duvet. Sunlight was streaming through the windows, casting lines along the floor. The sizzling smell of bacon drifted up across the landing, and I asked myself, how did I get here? For it had been the perfect moment, a diamond in the night, that perfect balance between the fighting and the flight of wild delight. It's complete, that kind of thing you like to keep. But as I began to follow, so began to fall, I recall that subtle sinking sensation that I had not seen it all as clearly as I could have, that my perception had a blind spot, an unknown hall of gore. I want a static object amidst a moving stream to think I would not be eroded was just a wishful dream, and so it happened the unfolding of the scene cut my mirror, and in the strangest place I drifted. And now that I've been tainted by the smoke and mirrors game, I no longer trust my mind, nor my feelings quite the same. I thought I had a lover, I thought I had a friend, but watching ticking clocks and paint dry upon the wall, the worst damn realisation is that it was never there at all.
Yeah, this came to me today for Archbishop Sean Brady. Sean? Cardinal Brady. So Brady, quite contrary. How does morality grow? With theology degrees up to your ears, you should know it's time to go. Begone, you knew enough. Repeated by the priests, I've done too much. We've cast the landlords off our backs with Thyrsa's indefatigable cry. We'll cast the soul lords off as well. You and your church can go to hell. So, in rest for the Quirk, I think.
Our car of it.